SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. It is day 20 of the Saratoga season, the midway point. And boy, it has flown by. And certainly the racing side of things has gone a long way to that. And then the social elements, including the last two nights across the street at the Humphrey Finney Pavilion, where the 100th Saratoga Select Yearling Sale was an absolute, particularly yesterday, frenetic and buying frenzy. And, after Monday, made the suggestion that it was going to be tough to, get to the numbers that were posted in 2019, but certainly that second half of the catalog did all it could. And I don't know if you saw some of the early, tweeting missives that I put out, but wasn't it on Monday when we talked to Nicole Russo? What did she say? Quality Road had potential to really drive not just night two, but, to really impact the sale. And that was a big part of the, certainly of the early elements of the session. And then came some seven-figure sellers, no less than three of them, including a old-fashioned knockdown drag-out bidding war that ultimately saw the Into Mischief colt hip 168 out of Paola Queen. That was the, you remember her? That was the Grupo 7. Right, Gustavo Delgado came and won the test at a big price. Coolmore coming out on top, $2.6 million. And I thought one of the interesting, and I'll talk about this with Sid when he joins us, he's coming over live. One of the interesting parts about that bidding war, as it were, was the rival that helped fuel it. And that was the Bessie Lou. I didn't know that that they were back in the game. So I'm anxious. I know that I'm pretty sure that Sid had a relationship with Bessie Lou at one point, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm imagining that. Ian Wilkes driving by, but 2.6 million to be the session and sale topper. Consigned by Gainsway, there was no shortage of exciting moments, and they came on a real regular basis. You had the Rachel Alexandra sibling, and actually three-quarter, by Bolt Oro that Hillendale consigned. You had that one go for $1.4 million to Larry Best. And interesting, Colt, we're certainly used to Larry Best buying, not that he's confined to buying fillies, but he does buy fillies with an eye on, his long-term broodmare band. But this one, Irresistible, $1.4 million. The Quality Roads that we talked about, the ones early on in the evening, hips, I think, the second and fourth hips through the ring, 111, the colt out of Harmonize, West Point and Woodford, 700,000, 800 for the Windstar / Maverick Racing Group out of Hung the Moon, TaylorMade consigned, that was hip 114. So $1.5 million worth of Quality Road stock in the first, 12 minutes. And that really seemed to energize things. And a lot of the stuff we talked about kind of came to pass, I thought, last night. And that included what I brought up with Jessica Martini yesterday, the fact that Mrs. Weber didn't, dive in feet first with any purchases on night one. Well, Live Oak, three purchases last night, 625, 600, and 775. All fillies. All fillies. And buying into some really nice families on that front, as Mrs. Weber is wont to do. Medaglia Dora filly that comes from the Samson Fountainhead. You had Quality Road out of Moore Hennessy, Lane's End, and a Warfront filly out of Sassification. That was fairly late in the evening. So basically, what, 1.9 million in activity last night for Live Oak. Lots of things to digest from the sale, and it was a very nice balance. And I think we'll see what Sid. I tried to reach John Sakura, seeing if he was going to stay around another day or two, but John's on his way back to the farm, back to Hillendale, and it was an outstanding sale. And today is Hillendale Wednesday, kind of appropriate, and Good Magic, part of the group of first crop stallions that really excelled at this sale. I mean, Justify, you kind of expected, of course. City of Light had a very good sale with seven for just under $3 million, averaging $428,000 essentially. Good Magic, seven sellers for $2.5 million, 362, almost $363,000 in average. And, that's 10 times a stud fee. Bolt Doro. But now, even if you net out the Bolt Doro Rachel sibling of $1.4 million, still a very nice sale for Bolt Doro as well. I mean, those are the ones. Justified, yeah. Those all kind of jumped out at me. And we'll get more from Sid when he joins us around 10 o'clock. And very luckily, and it was opportune that I sent a note out to Michael Bacik, the champ, who is in town. And he only brought along, not right with him right now, but brought to town one of the biggest names in New Orleans dining, and one of the favorites of so many racetrackers. Pick this baby up, Michael Bacik. I mentioned Sid will be here later, and so will Rick Amerley, and so will Seth Merrow. So it'll be a nice parade, and then whoever I yank from today's headlines, welcome back to Saratoga, Michael Bacik.
Great to see you, Steve. Thank you. Love being here. And I didn't bring the chef, but I brought his gumbo. He was supposed to come, Frank Brightson, who is, as you said, one of the preeminent chefs in New Orleans, Brightson's Restaurant, one of my favorite go-to places. I send everybody there. And he's a racetracker, which is even better. So he made it, the gumbo, and it came with me on the plane frozen, and we're going to cook it up this afternoon over at
That's great. Wait, you brought the base.
I bought the base, we're going to cook it up late this afternoon. It'll be fresh and ready to go at 6 o'clock.
Tell everybody where it is. This is the second of the gumbo tastings. The first one, of course, by courtesy of Kendrick Carmouche and his wife, and that was a huge hit. And this has become a thing in recent seasons. And the opportunity to how spicy is this going to be?
Well, it's, I saw Ken. I don't want to talk poorly about a fellow Louisianian, but I saw a picture of Kendrick's gumbo, and it looked more like soup.
Ooh.
It is a little thin.
Ooh, this could get ugly.
This is going to be very. This is a traditional roux heavy based. Not the greatest thing to serve when we're in the middle of a heat wave.
No, it's good. They say hot.
Hot
beverages. Yes, hot beverages cool you off.
We have cold beer, and hot gumbo. It's a chicken and andouille, and it'll be the best that anybody's ever had, because it's the best that I've ever had, and I've had a lot.
Give everybody, I make this analogy or this explanation because it's a funny, it's just a funny personal thing. Tina, I made Tina shrimp Creole when we were dating. It was one of my hooks. You bring out the big guns. And ever since then, she's called it jambalaya, which is so funny. So when she says to me, will you make jambalaya? I said, shrimp Creole, yes. But we're together, 14 years. And in fact, our 10th anniversary is coming up in September. But she keeps calling it jambalaya. And I've stopped trying to explain the difference. But when you mention the chicken and andouille sausage, explain the different gumbos, because there's plenty with shrimp, and every joint you go to in NOLA has got their own little spin on it, or they have a variety of gumbos that they'll lay out, as a special day to day.
Well, when they say when you're making gumbo, first you start with a roux, which is R-O-U-X.
Everything ends with an X.
Right, and that's a common, cooking element, but it's a French, it's flour and oil, basically. And you just brown your flour in the oil, and depending on how dark you want it, that's how dark you'll make your roux. And if you're making a seafood gumbo, it'll be a lighter roux probably. And if you got something more, more proteinish with meat, like a chicken and andouille, you'll make a darker roux. But that's how, that every gumbo is roux based. And as you said, if you're cooking shrimp Creole, you probably make a very light, colored, I would think. I'm not sure your recipe, but I would make a very light colored roux with a shrimp Creole. So the lighter the protein, the lighter the
interesting
the roux.
Interesting. And that, because I hadn't really ever, I just follow whatever I've got. I may have more, surprisingly, now that I think about it, I may have more New Orleans based cookbooks, and I've got a huge cookbook collection. I may have more New Orleans books than anything. I've got that Cooking Up a Storm, the collection from the Picayune, which is really cool, because that comes from their collection for years. And I'm going to forget the name of the woman that for decades was the, not the home ec, but the cooking home ec specialist, but has, the Picayune has got recipes that New Orleans and
the restaurants share their
well.
Yeah.
So I got that. I've got Brennan's. I got the great Brennan's cookbook. I've got a gumbo and Creole and soups cookbook. I bet you I've got three or four others too. Now that I'm thinking about it,
there's a lot to choose from.
Wow,
there's a lot.
Well, there was that. It's gone now, sadly. There was that cookbook store, a cookbook
thrift. Was there really?
Right, what's the name of that little, right around the corner from Gentilly, there was a donut shop. There's a donut shop that's been there forever, and right across the street there was this little strip center, and I see that it's a bookstore, a cookbook store. And so I went in. I must have bought eight cookbooks.
I'm a cookbook collector as well. Yeah, and I have Frank Brightson, who cooked with K. Paul Prudhomme. That was his mentor, who had K. Paul's. And I think Prudhomme died, last year. But he was really the original Cajun chef that the world was introduced to, K. Paul. Frank has a couple cookbooks that you can get online, Frank Brightson, and they're just self-published. But I'm a follower of John Besh, who had, a bit of a fall from grace a couple, 3 years ago, sexual harassment and stuff. But his restaurants are great. Now I'm really a fan of Donald Link, who has some of my favorite restaurants in New Orleans, Herb Saint, Couchon.
Couchon being pig.
Yeah, right. He's just one of the best, and he does great cookbooks too. So, but tonight, It's all about the gumbo, and it's all about the doing a little bit for aftercare. And I love, you know, that they're actually having a couple events almost every week now. It seems like they're having, you know, events where they're raising money. And it's very important. As you know, I'm a big advocate. I was a little disheartened, Steve, to see, you know, what percent of the sales price of these horses go to aftercare, and it's really minuscule. And I hate to get on a soapbox here and rant a little bit, but it's almost embarrassing how small of a percentage that they put aside for aftercare when these, you know, people are spending. Now I know there's you know exceptions. Bobby Flay I know does an awful lot for aftercare, you know, but it's just such an easy thing to do. Why wouldn't the percentage just be a little bit higher if you're paying $1 million for a horse? Put aside, you know, $2,500, you know, not $500.
My only answer to that is that in a lot of cases, if you went through the buying bench, there's probably, you know, a fairly high percentage that have existing ties to
absolutely
certain organizations,
right,
that they're already giving to on a going basis, not just giving but capitalizing,
right,
you know, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm not, I know you're right, and that's why I said they do a lot, but it's just such a, it's like, I love that Naira, which a lot of other tracks don't do, you know, when you cash a bet on Naira bets, there's an option,
yes,
to give a dollar, give whatever you want to give of your winnings to aftercare. And I do it every time. And it's just like a dollar. Well, those dollars, you know, they'll add up. And I mean, if I'm here for a week and hopefully I'll cash a few tickets, you know, I may up giving $100. I mean, which I would never do if I didn't have the option.
It's painless.
It's totally painless. It's like, right.
And
which is what the set aside for the auctions, it really is kind of painless.
There's a number of things that have cropped up, and especially with now I got my first one the other day, about 2-3 weeks ago, my first the debit card tied to the checking account, and it was the first time that it's got that touch and pay, you know, the little extra chip thing, and there's so many when you look at the, you know, the Apple Pays and all these you know vending systems, and more and more you're seeing the breakage, you know, would you like to round up and donate? McDonald's is doing it, at the drive-thru, and Dunkin' Donuts does it, and it's a very easy way. And frankly, when I say the word breakage, it might be that actually is probably a project that should be attempted, which is the breakage remnants and the uncashed ticket funds that the racetracks typically have to turn over to states. Might be time for the racetrack organizations to advocate and to go to state government and say, we would like either all of that or some of it for distribution to this kind of an infrastructure.
Too. And for jockeys,
absolutely.
You know,
for PDJF.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. That's a great idea. Racing doesn't like great ideas usually, so we'll have to see. We've done a lot of good work in Louisiana over the past 4 or 5 years on aftercare, which I'm very proud of. It takes people like Maggie Moss. It takes people like Victoria Keith of Fox Hill. You know, it takes people like me who have some sort of political acumen. You know, and we're all doing it for free, but it's worth it, and it just. But we need those people in every state. You know how far, though, we've come in so, you know, I was reminded that it's been 10 years since I won the NHC, almost, and 9 years since I gave that speech at the Eclipse Awards. And at that time, that was like a, you know, I mean, it was not top shelf idea about aftercare. Yes, it was coming along. But now, you know, everybody, it's a top of mind issue to the racing industry, thankfully. And it's something that, you know, we've done a really good job over the past decade of increasing the funds, and we could do a whole lot more.
This, and I want to make sure that everybody understands where this is going to be. You know, it's after the races. Technically, we're calling it six. Last post
six
is,
to eight.
Yeah, six to eight, and the last post is 6:13, and hopefully everybody's live in this pick six carryover. And are you in a position to give opinions today or not?
Only on the last couple. I started from the back.
All right, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But 6 o'clock to 8, let's call it, and it's at Simply Food by Mora, which is 666, easy to remember, 666 Route 9. So if you know the way out to Winslow's and to Nove and to Wishing Well and to Chez Pierre and to Grant's Cottage. We've been advocating people go visit Grant's Cottage on the same road. You can go see where Ulysses S. Grant retired. But 666, easy to remember, on Route 9, 6 to 8 tonight, Simply Food by Mora. And this will be, what's the donation? Is it tickets?
It's 30 25? At the door, 25 online.
25 online.
And 30 at the door, and you get a gumbo and a beer. And if you want another gumbo, I'm sure there'll be plenty available. Plenty available.
Here comes another dream team rolling around the backside. Jimmy Ventura and company, and Hammer, and I love it. When you talk about the advent, the increased awareness, I mean, there's been several flashpoints along the way that have contributed, you know, to the increased awareness, and I don't want to say that everything is a reaction to crises. It may appear that way to people, but there was always a steady drumbeat. But there were a couple of things that happened. We've talked about this over the years. There was the completely unfounded and really disgusting attack on TRF that was perpetrated by the New York Times that attacked them really erroneously, but the industry had to respond. And one thing that came out of that was a positive was the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, essentially a clearinghouse and an umbrella organization, you know, in an industry that has got a lot of umbrellas. This one has worked in a much better than anyone could have hoped or expected. Because not only did they create the certification, the accreditation program of going to various retirement centers and accrediting them, but it also alleviated what had been an understandable but difficult clamor for dollars by all of the agencies out there. And there was a lot of infighting and a lot of finger pointing from one aftercare agency to another. You know, that we're better, they don't do this, we do that. It was not productive. So the TAA has managed to completely neutralize that element, and it does feel, Michael, that everybody is tending their own garden. If I can pull from Jerzy Kaczynski.
Well, and that's you touched on one of the most critical parts of nonprofit work, which I'm a little familiar with, in that, you know, you want the work that your charity work to be the work that you do. And what ends up happening a lot for nonprofits is most of their time and money is spent on raising money to try to do the work. And so what the TAA has done successfully, as you say, is they've taken that piece of work off the table for some of these organizations, and so that they give them they'll raise the money, they're the clearinghouse, and they'll grant them the accreditation, and they grant them the money. And that is just such a huge benefit to these local organizations, state organizations, small new vocations in different states, that they can now spend their time, rather than raising money to do the work, they're actually doing the work because TAA gives them the money to do it. So that's a huge thing. Now, they still go out and raise money on their own, but it's just, I can't tell you what a time suck raising money is for these, and that's not where they should be spending their time. They should be spending their time doing the charity work that they do, and that goes for all charities. But it's just been It was a great. Thankfully, it's one of the few things I think in horse racing where, you know, we have, as you say, we have a lot of alphabet soup organizations, but it's come together where this really, that sort of structure has really worked and is working well for aftercare.
And it's create what I think the most entertaining element of this is, and the most gratifying is it's created creativity actually has kind of just blossomed from every quarter, creating new and different and interesting ways to raise money painlessly.
And apparently there's some clamor out there and some buzz about a gumbo cook-off between Kendrick Carmouche and Brightson Baychok, and maybe we can get that next year if we can't get Bobby Flay. You know, who I'm working on. If we can't get Bobby Flay, then Kendrick and I will have a gumbo cook-off next year and combine the events and maybe raise some more money.
I love it. A couple of thoughts racing-wise. What's been have you been, you've been you've been kind of quiet, right?
I took the first 3 weeks off of Saratoga and Del Mar. I was in one of those just periods where I was going to start prepping for the NHC. And I usually take, 30 days or so off totally just to kind of refresh. It's helped in the past. And so I started doing that right after the 4th of July in prep for the NHC. But so I didn't bet the first 3 weeks. But I got back in it last week and here I am. So I'm not exactly prepping for the NHC. Still undecided, actually, whether I'm going this year.
Well, let's quickly hit on this because I'm going to reach out to, if not today, maybe tomorrow. I spent a couple of minutes the other day with Keith Shamblin and Jim Gluckson, as it happens, on Saturday. And, it is a monitoring situation. And, it seemed when this was scheduled for the August date that, we were excited because it was going to be at a time of the year that has got, unbelievable racing at our disposal to include in the optionals or the mandatories. But, and we figured, things were on their way, to being, I don't want to say normalized, but we were on our way to green pastures. Instead, we've got this resurgent scenario, and a segment of the population that is just it's amazing to me as someone who got a TB, four-headed pincushion in the arm as a child, as somebody who couldn't go to school when I grew up and you grew up without being inoculated. It's bizarre.
It is, and I don't want to go off that cliff.
I will.
But, it's bizarre. And that's really the reason. There's two reasons. One, not to go to Vegas or go to Vegas for the NHC is, I go out there to have fun. I go out there to see people like yourself, to see friends that I only see once a year, to, drink with, go out to dinner, commiserate, gamble with. And it just doesn't feel right to me to go out there. First of all, do I know that they're vaccinated? Some maybe yes, some maybe no. We're probably going to be, there's an indoor mask mandate in Vegas. So, and it's all indoors. You're not going outside. So that's just, it's just a little concerning. That's all. I mean, it's more of the restriction on having a normal time. It's not going to be a normal time. On the other hand, the allure of winning the NHC, you only get a few this is my only chance this year,
right?
And it's a lot of money, so I'll probably end up going out for it. I'm not going to be able to turn down the opportunity to compete for the 800,000 or whatever it is, so I'll probably be there, more than likely.
They're sitting right now, essentially, the there's a magic number that they have in mind that it becomes sort of a threshold that so far there's been apparently about 40 that have kind of begged off. And it does seem that there's going to be some options provided. We'll get an update soon.
I know that they're doing the best that they can. It's an awful situation. I mean, it's just logistically, it's a terrible situation for NTRA. And I know those guys, Keith and Michelle. I mean, they do just a fabulous job. They really do. And it's they'll do the best they can.
Yeah,
and we'll see
exactly.
What happens.
All right, now I need an opinion or two from you. If you got some to help people build their Pick 6 ticket today, we talked yesterday to Andy and to Nick Tamaro. I've put up my early analysis pre-scratch is up at the website, and it's funny. I had more confidence before I talked to Nick and to Andy yesterday, and they both had some suggestions and ideas that had me now not questioning my decisions, but just opened up a couple of options that I realize are really perilous. I mean, this is a tough sequence, Mike.
Yeah, it is, and I'm going to work from the back, and that's where I started and. That's where I'm going to work from, and I'll give you two crazy opinions in the last race.
All right.
First is the 11. Lou loves the river. Now, if you look at his turf races, he's had three dirt races in a row, but his turf race at Aqueduct back in April.
Is that the Ryerson?
Yeah. Looks on paper, if you look at it, a lot better than what it looks like in the racing form of Bristol. So, and look, I respect Dave Aragona. He's one of the sharpest, best, and he's probably right that the horse should be 30-1 morning line because the brown is probably going to be even money, maybe, you know. But this horse is not a 30-1 normal shot. I mean, I think he's extremely live. And the other horse I think is also very, very live is also 30-1 addicted to you. Now, if you looked at his last race, he did something that a maiden claimer normally doesn't do, and that is he got basically stopped in top of the stretch, and you think, well, he's just going to, you know, fade off, go back, and lose by 10. And he actually re-rallied and kept coming, and he only got beat two lengths for all, and he beat the fifth place horse, probably I think by four or five lengths. So now I don't think he'll be 30-1 either, but I think both of those, you know, if you're looking to beat the brown, those are ones I would think. And I'm not crazy about the brown. I mean, I guess he's a must use. I might end up playing against and not using him at all.
He as I wrote this morning, the best hop is the drop, and you know, this is a horse for the first time being dangled down to maiden 40. His races in maiden special weight company are easily. You know, three lengths better than anybody in here, to be honest. And it's just a question. He's a five-year-old. They're finally just, you know, giving him away. They were looking, I think, you know, to try to defray the cost. I can't argue. I mean, there's nothing wrong with him except that he's been second and third, you know, five times in six career starts. So it's just, is he a horse that just refuses to win? It might just be that he's just that much better than these, and that's how he puts over. You haven't mentioned Viking Zim, who I made the second choice. Viking Zim, absolutely, is coming out of that live race where Danzig with the Stars won back again. There was another winner out of that race as well. And I picked Addicted to You third, actually, as the best value. But I, in terms of ticket building, here's the challenge. This is a murderous, I called it devilish, sequence.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the first couple.
Oh, forget it. Your eyes are going
to
bleed.
My decision on whether to use the brown will depend on the first, who am I playing in the first legs. If it looks chalky, then I'll never use him, right? And if I think I have some long shots I can throw in the first, in some of the sequence, then I will use him, because I certainly don't want to be, you know, not live to him if I had hit a couple 6 or 8-1s in the first part of the sequence. But if you're telling me that it looks, you know, it doesn't look so chalky, then yeah, he's probably going to be a must use. And that's how I would approach it. I'm not a great pick six player, but you know, you don't want to be along with the crowd. I mean, you want to try to find the horse that he looks like on paper, a horse that you would want to try to play against and like leave out. Everybody's going to be playing him, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If he, you don't want a horse everybody's really going to be playing, unless you think he's a standout. He doesn't look that, he's a maiden claimer. There is no such thing. as a standout to me.
You know, considering the company he's kept in maiden special tries, he on paper, yeah, he is a standout. He's certainly in this sequence not a horse that you're gonna if he wins I lose. No,
that's what it's sounding like. No. Like I said, I haven't looked at the first three, but
all right. So that's work your way up. What about the Turf Sprint Stake?
I liked Sky's Not Falling quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't remember much about the past performances because I'm not looking at them, but I do remember that I really like Sky's Not Falling. I actually kind of like Jackson Traveler, but I heard they're going to scratch Jackson Traveler.
Yeah, in fact, I forgot yesterday that when we had Steve Asmussen on Tuesday, was it Tuesday or Monday? No, yesterday was Tuesday, Monday. Steve said they're going to go down to Maryland and poach a Maryland stake.
Yeah, and that's as far as I've gotten so far today.
All right,
I'm working from the back. I don't like coming to the final race and saying, oh well, you know, my ticket's so big now I can only use two. You know, so the mindset of like go through the sequence, but I'm going to go from the back because then I know what the sequence looks like, and I'm not trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, which when you get to the, oh shit, my ticket is like too big. Well, I'm going to single the brown because I can't afford to go, you know. So I don't know. I'm just trying to switch it up a little bit.
There's a lot of particularly multi-race players that do that work from the back. I've done it, or I've jumped around, you know, to certain races, or I'll skip over a race. Like yesterday, I rode up races, the first leg, the fourth, fifth, and sixth legs. Then I came back to the second and third. I thought the sixth and the seventh were the two really, you know, real quandary spots in the sequence. And so did Andy and Nick Tamaro yesterday, too. So, you know, it's funny. If you know, for those that then, there's a formula out there that people might not think of. When you find a race that you're confused, and then you get curious, let me go to DRF, let me see who, you know, who Mike Beer and Chuck Cuellas and Kenny Pecker are using, or if it's, you know, if it's Kentucky, you know, who's Marty like, etc. Marcus Hirsch, you know, everybody, Brad Free, you know, go look at the grid, and you know, and actually we on Wednesdays or Thursdays we've been having John Chapazian and Tom Law from This Is a Horse Racing. So I've had the chance to look at what they're doing with their grid. And you'll find a race that you're kind of confused, and then you go and take a consensus, and everybody's all over the board. And it occurred to me actually more this summer, I think, than ever before, that not a bad way to gauge your opinion of a race. If everybody else is confused as you are, that it tells you this is a spot to take, you know, to take a swing, and that if everybody else is all over the place, then your instinct was right.
Yeah, I know you mentioned Beer and Kenny Peck, and I know that they mashed the Saratoga Derby. Kenny had the one, and and the consensus was the nine.
This is the second giant price that
Beer has made
not just picked,
right?
Made the best bet.
Oh wow!
State of Rest was his best bet of Saturday.
Wow.
I mean,
that's insane.
And I think it was on opening day too. I forget who it was. He made Gary's horse. Yeah. He made Siaka's horse, who actually runs tomorrow. Yeah. She runs tomorrow. Made that his best bet too at you know, like 9-1 or 8-1. So, you know, outside the box thinking, I like the one was my DePaula play of the day, you know, the Clement First North America. And I thought for a second I was a winner. And then all of a sudden I see, oh, boy, here's the O'Brien flying. But anyway, I'm anxious to see you later today. Michael Bajic and his Ben. Ben's in town.
Ben is coming for the first time. He's coming today.
He's never been here ever?
Never. Finally convinced him to come.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's coming tonight.
Is he staying a couple of days?
We'll be here through Sunday.
You'll be through Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see you. Yeah.
What other Baychik sightings? What else have they signed you up for?
No, that's it.
This is it?
If I get through today, I can enjoy my vacation. Yeah.
Michael Baychik.
Gotta go cook my gumbo and
get that gumbo going.
My pick six ticket, hopefully, too.
Well,
thank you, Steve.
Michael, this was wonderful. Michael Baychik, everybody, the champ, and Simply Food by Mora, 666 Route 9 in Wilton, on the way for anybody on their way, anybody knows where Winslow's is, and right out to Nove and the Wishing Well and so forth. Go right out Route 9, 666. Simply Food by Mora, 6 to 8 tonight, $25 online, $35 actually at the door, a beer and Baychik, Frank Brightson's gumbo. Outstanding. You can come say hello. You can say how your meat's going at the midway point. Uh-oh. All right. Clocker John, everybody, making a video. Oh, I didn't take a picture of Baychik. Now he's gone. You going back Monday?
Yes.
Well, the our horses are back on. When do horses come back?
I'm going to take a week off before I go to NXT.
Okay. Oh, all right. So have you made dinner? We have any reservations?
My friend Rock's taking care of it.
All right. All right. Great.
Chicago's taking care of it.
Yeah. Because I suspended myself a note to make reservations, and then I missed it. Very good. All right. John's on top of it, everybody. And we were going to have Jimmy and Hammer together. Hammer was co-opted. He's been here. Grab that stick and click that on. I think Baychik turned it off. Up. There you go. You're live.
I'm live.
Jimmy Ventura, everybody. And look at this. There's Sid Fernando and Cece making the scene as well, looking like a country singer. Outstanding. Here's Hammer coming as well. So it's all coming together. It's unbelievable.
As it always does in Saratoga. It always comes together.
And first and foremost, how did you do last night? You were selling one.
We scratched our horse.
Oh, you did.
And we're going to revisit it and either just race them or bring them into another sale. And then the other one, obviously Bobby sold for $1.6 million.
We talked about that. The Dame Dorothy baby that led opening night was eclipsed by a buying frenzy. And we'll talk about it with Sid in a minute. Bessie Lou back in the game? Right? How about that?
It's tough to see everybody when you're on the floor.
Well, and they're you know, they're coming from the phone. They're coming from the back, backyard. The buyers are all over. But then the reporting of the $2.6 million sale topper, I was stunned. Bessie Lou now is going to come back.
They're going partners with Coomar on that?
No. They were the underbidder.
Oh, okay.
They were driving the bidding. And so I guess he's had enough of those Pasofinos that he's famous for, Mr. Leone.
Yeah.
Crazy. I thought they were done.
Yeah, I thought they were completely out of it for a while.
And then they brought them back in.
That's it. Every time I get back, they suck me back in. Just like the Godfather.
Hammer, welcome back to Saratoga. Look at you with your Rams hat.
Yeah, I had the Yankees on yesterday, Rams. I'm an equal opportunity hat guy. If the hat fits, I wear it. Doesn't matter what's on front. But I couldn't get my crypto account open last night.
Wow, that'll
get
you
in there.
The first cryptocurrency payment, $100,000 last night.
Right. Who did? Was that Spendthrift? Was it Spendthrift?
No, it was a guy.
It was a guy. Oh, okay.
Just a guy.
So pretty. Well, I guess
the guy behind the guy.
Yeah.
We're opening up.
You don't even know where the guy came from.
We're opening up new avenues.
New frontiers.
Right? New funding.
New frontiers.
So did Jimmy tell you the blueberry pancake story?
No.
Okay, so I got a... This is for you. So I was yesterday morning out... we had a meeting, Great Estates meeting, over on the sale grounds. And it got over about 10:30. And I texted Jimmy and I said... what's going on? He goes, well, why don't you just come on over for breakfast or something? And I go, I kind of ate already. And he just texted me, it just says blueberry pancakes. And I'm like, all right, what's the big deal? So I go over, and I had...
I think I know where this is going.
So there's, I get there, everything's cleaned up, and there's a plate on the kitchen counter, blueberry pancakes with, the, you know, pancakes, blueberries, and yeah, what's the big deal?
Maple butter.
Maple butter,
goes, that's the clincher, goes, Neil Kleinberg!
He goes, Neil came over and made pancakes.
Exactly.
In the morning. And I tell you what, I may never have a pancake again.
No.
It was the most spectacular pancake, stack of pancakes I ever had with maple butter, which I have never, you know, we
that's,
don't do that.
That's one of
we
the signatures of Clinton Street Baking Company.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So my mouth is watering thinking about it, and I said, I got to tell Steve. I'm one up on him already this week on the food.
It's funny. As many times as we've been to Clinton Street, I've had a forkful of the pancakes, but I'm not really a pancake guy. And in fact, I'm not a breakfast, a hot breakfast French toast. I'll have a challah French toast here and there, but I'm not waffles. I'm not big on that. I'm an egg guy.
Well, I've turned into a smoothie guy. I found my little smoothie place here in town.
You've always been a smoothie. Yeah. You're an old smoothie.
Well, Neil was
okay,
also,
but anyway.
Neil was also frying up eggs. So we had
the blueberry pancakes. Then Siaka made me make him another set of pancakes with bananas and walnuts.
That's an option.
Which is also
that's
a good option.
That's an option.
But he fried up some eggs, too. He literally came in as if he was catering for 100 people, as he does, walks in the house.
The bags.
And next thing, and then he, as fast as he cooked everything up,
he's gone.
He goes, I have to be back to the city, Manhattan, by 11. And I'm like, dude, do you know, like, we're not around, we're not downtown. So it was awesome. It was an awesome show he put on.
He came up for a week. He's come up for a week every year, and there's rent, you know, rents a house, and he's been, you know, just a wonderful addition. You know, he started calling the show. I mean, he was a listener, and he's kept saying, come to Clinton Street. So finally we did, and, you know, then he came in on our horses, and he came over to the house last week when we had our party, and he was a huge help. He finished off some of the grill stuff. He sliced up the tenderloin, had the 7-pound tenderloin, and...
yeah, great guy.
He's the greatest.
At the races
the
a couple weeks ago,
yep.
when DT was running...
Yeah,
running one, so it was great. I was just like completed the circle, the pancakes. Put it this way, you know when you type a person's name in and you just get to the first letter of the last name and it comes up Neil Kleinberg pancakes. You know that, and then a picture of the pancakes pop. They pop right up, and I go, "That's what I had."
And we got to get you. We got to get you guys across the bridge. He's 2 minutes from you. It's Clinton Street and Houston Street at the corner, three blocks down from Katz's. And yeah, we'll get you on the VIP card list.
It's been great.
Too fun. How wonderful. I'm going to let you you got to bear with me for 1 second here because I just got the note. I forgot. It's already the morning is flying by. I just got the notice from Brian at Capital OTB. I've got to do my play of the day. So they're going to cut in here for us, and let me just get, there we go. Let's see about the Zoom meeting. So we'll,
what do you think?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see if that works. There we go. Launch meeting, and there I am. All right, join with video. This has been a fairly funny scenario. All right, so we got. I think we got a good minute or so. He'll flag me down when the time is right. Sales last night. You always like coming to the sale.
Love it. I tell you, with the 2-day break, I tell you, I'm enjoying the 2 days, the Monday, Tuesday off, as much as I am coming to the races. You find things to do, and of course, the sale's been around. Actually, had an official visit. You know, having meetings here, but I enjoy the sales, just the atmosphere, the people, you know, watching it go down, and it's very safe for me because there's no shot that I'm raising my hand at this sale anyway. Maybe another one, get me to Timonium or something like that, I'm all right, but it's just fun watching it go down and then being, you know, sitting with the sitting with the crew and Bobby and watching him sell the sail topper on Monday night, a repeat of 2 years ago, is kind of cool. And that's what gets the game going. It keeps it going, keeps people involved, and it's great to see.
Jimmy, some impressions from you?
Yeah, the sales were strong. I mean, it was very, very competitive. I know made a pretty good run on a Warfront that Mrs. Weber bought yesterday.
Saw that. She swung into action.
Yeah, she was swinging pretty good. And it's crazy. I mean, you know, the younger sires, I mean, Bolt D'Oro, he's been selling really well. So the individuals have to be pretty stellar. And, you know, I'm a Gunrunner fan. I have a suckling by Gunrunner, so I'm pretty excited about him as a stallion. So and they sold well, and you have Sid here, so I guess that he could add his 2 cents to something along those. I mean, right? I mean, right. And then I guess the other one that Steve ran already, that first one, was it Zulu Alpha, I guess that one comes back in probably the spin away, but he looks on fire. But I'll defer to the
you're the one who's got the one. You got one yourself.
I do.
That means you knew what you were doing.
Well, we got lucky. We bred on the bubble and we got a really nice super filly, and we'll hold her too.
You have to do breed on the bubble and something you like. It's just like betting. Back your opinion.
Yep. So we got lucky, and hopefully we'll sell it up at Saratoga.
Nice
year.
I'm waiting here on them, and you got me, Brian. You okay? Yeah. Just give me a you know, finger point. You got volume?
Who's giving the play? You or Brian?
I am. Brian's okay. Brian is the is the long suffering engineer for Capital OTB. It's essentially like being. He's sort of like Scotty in Star Trek. You know, there's a bunch of anonymous, faceless engineering people in the division that you know, seemingly can't do anything right, and he has to
fix
it. You know, yeah,
so he takes care of Seth as well.
Taking care of Seth is a full time job. Seth will be here at some point too. In fact,
oh, will he?
He'll come over here. Great to have Jimmy and. Tara here and Hammer back. How long are you staying? You staying through Sunday?
No, be here through Friday.
Just through Friday.
Got to get back and go to Del Mar.
Right. All right. Well, we'll see.
We'll be together at Del Mar next week.
A week from tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, for broadcast overlooking the paddock at Old Del Mar. And in fact, Casey, we have not played. We have not played Bing. We have not played Turf Meets the Surf. So we're going
to have to save it for next week.
Yeah, we got to dust off the 78. And I'm waiting. Yes, you want me? No, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Okay, so we got 3 more minutes. apparently, right, before
I made when I was here. 10 days ago-ish, when I went home, I think on a Friday, and then I got home, and Gina goes, what are we doing this weekend? I go, I don't know, but I got to go to Del Mar on Sunday. So I took a little trip to Del Mar for the Sunday.
Right.
And I had been down there in a while. I had to do a little prep run to make sure you got set up for the radio and, you know. But so that'll be fun going down there. Gina, my wife Gina, and Tina, she wants to be the tour guide. So she'll take you all over the place. We'll find some good, we got some reservations at a couple spots already. And so we'll do the food thing.
Nice.
And just to lay it out. The food on the East Coast is better than the food on the West Coast. That's all I can say. In general, I mean,
interesting.
It's bigger, it's better. I mean,
wow.
Someone who's, you know, I'm not a foodie, but I enjoy good food. I mean, you get more of it, and it's just, I don't know what it is. It's deeper.
It's a deeper bench. If you want to hear a funny take on the dining scene out West, you need to. Grab Allison and Claude Ray McGahee and let Suge and Allison tell you about their dining experiences.
Well, I'll go see Suge tomorrow, and Allison's usually there, and I'll ask them.
It is literally is a floor show. I mean, he could take it on Jimmy Kimmel, and as long as the audience was all, you know, horse people, it would that's go. Funny. Oh my God, no, he had us on the floor.
There's good spots, don't get me wrong, but just by and large,
this is not gonna score points.
No, no, but it's the truth. People like the truth. Anybody that's made, you know, that's eaten in a diner in you know, Lyndhurst, New Jersey, can tell you that's you know, better than most breakfast places you're going to find in California. I don't know that. We just find that out here. You know, just coming back here. The specialty shops are, look, when Jimmy took me to Vita Mia in northern Jersey for the first time, and I go, where are we going? Well, we're going to get some sausage bread. And we're driving to the area, and there's like a line down the sidewalk. And I go, gee, I wonder what that's for. And he goes, well, we're standing in that line a half hour to go get some sausage bread. And you take one bite of it, and you understand right? that. So that's my tip.
Ready for me?
Sausage bread at Vita Mia. That's my best bet of the day.
All right. I love that. And, of course, we also got the coffee cake. Hey, everybody. Capital OTB and sitting here with we got a big crowd. And want to tell everybody you've got the chance today, 6 to 8, TRF, the fundraiser, out at 666 Route 9. Michael Bacik and the Gumbo Fest, $35 at the door for a beer and gumbo. So go take advantage, and the money goes to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Today, the play of the day, I got Jimmy Ventura, and I got Rick Hammerly here. I've got Sid Fernando and his wife, Cece. It's all happening over at the racetrack. And I tell you, it's a lot cooler and more comfortable than we expected. It was supposed to be miserably hot, but it's pretty nice.
Especially okay. in the shade. It's beautiful with the breeze.
Absolutely.
Beautiful today.
Here we go. I'm going to go to the seventh race today. And the first level allowance going a mile and an eighth on the grass. This is a devilishly tough group. And Community Adjusted is 10-1. This is a horse that has run in three straight mile and a quarter races, including the maiden breaker, and then an allowance try down state. And in terms of fitness and readiness, you'd have to think that he and or she, these are three-year-old fillies, and El Est Forte for Ian Wilkes, those are the two that have, the only horses in the field that have been a mile and an eighth or beyond. So I think there's a fitness factor involved in here. Community Adjusted with Manny Franco. Want to see him forwardly placed behind the speed. Want to see him attend the pace and finish. 10-1, but there are countless horses in here that are eligible. Miss Delicious is going to be wheeling on the front end. You've got Town Avenger, who is stretching out a second time from six to a mile, now to a mile and an eighth. This is a really good race in a really difficult pick six carryover sequence. For me, it's Community Adjusted, and I want to make sure about the number, because 10-1, the 9 horse, 10-1, Manny Franco, Christoph Clement, and the Summerfront Philly, Community Adjusted. That's the key horse in the DePaula play of the day. Good luck, everybody. There it is. All right. And there's our DePaula play of the day concept that has been really kind of fun. We've had some nice success. We've had every single horse we've used has hit at least has cashed a check.
No kidding.
Nobody's been worse than we've had 1/4 and 1/5. Other than that, first and seconds only. And it's been, you know, to me, it's the concept. I mean, are there plays of the day that are more logical? Yeah, of course. There's like horses that are
the best bets of the day that are going to be 2-1 or.
What's your preference? I mean, when somebody gives their what's your best bet today? Well, is it the horse that I think is live at the best price, or is it the most likely winner on the day? There's a distinction to be made.
Absolutely. When there's something that I like a lot, I will. You know, if all of a sudden this horse ticks down to 6-5, and obviously the gate hasn't opened yet, so you really don't know when they're going to drop the odds. But I'll look at a horse that's 4-1 or going up, and if I see that, I'm just going to bet more. Take advantage of the price play if you like a horse. So the best bet, not
is not always the one you think is going to win. The best bet to me is the one that you like, that you can get what you feel is a square price, similar to what you've been doing. I think that was a 10-to-1 shot that you put there as your play of the day. Right, the last one's 10-to-1.
That's what they've been. We had that horse of Clement's, actually, now that I think about it. Clement on Saturday in the Saratoga Derby, the first North America.
Yep.
That just looked like a horse that was being that was acquired for that spot in mind, and then proceeded actually to run better than even I anticipated. Frankly, I mean, I kind of used them as kind of a tri-key idea, but ended up only being beaten by the Joseph O'Brien that Johnny gave a brilliant ride to.
And that horse paid a ton, right?
Oh, fuck, it was ridiculous.
It was 26-to-1?
21-to-1.
21-to-1.
Which was crazy for that horse to be that price. But that's the beauty of what? I think it was in an 11-horse field.
Correct.
And that, some people are saying, oh, it's been very chalky at Saratoga. It hasn't been chalky. If you're going to just confine this to the winners, there's been plenty of horses that you can make money with here because you don't necessarily have to have a 20-to-1 winning if you key off of price horses that you think are going to run well and you put them with logicals, you're going to get paid.
If you put them in the trifectas, in like you do, like in second and third, or I'll bet superfectas, and try to key it with a horse, and then put maybe 7 horses with my key. And hope one of the bombs win. Put them first and second and hope something hits.
Well, Hammer, you guys, when we do our Breeders' Cup handicapping, the two of you, there's a couple of different things. Johnny D and Will Schwartz with their 7-horse Derby box, super box. Hammer and you guys have talked about keying horses like that with all. And that the Breeders' Cup is the place to take that chance. I mean, on a going basis, I don't think you can do it. I think financially, it.
But even like that key horse in these big fields, 11, 12 horse fields, you put them in the second, third slot. And if, again, I think it's, you can put 7 horses in there for a dime, it's $21. If you key one horse with 7 others, it's $21. Right? So it doesn't have to be crazy. You could obviously increase the dollar amount, but it's a good play for me if it's a full field.
Well, Kenny Kirkner years ago came up with the revert. What I asked him, how do you bet? This was at Churchill, so it had to be in the late aughts, and I said, how do you like to bet Breeders' Cup races? And he said, I like to find 30-to-1 shots that are going to run third, and I do the reverse tri key. And he'll go 6x5 or 5x4, and then put the 30-to-1 shot third, because you go through charts of Breeders' Cups. There's countless horses that are, again, because of the size of the fields, that are just not going to see money, and they're going to be, frankly, they might be 30-to-1 in the wind pool. They might even be longer in the exotic pools.
Yeah, no, the back wheel is a great tool for a long shot. You might get beat, and there's no way you're picking the winner, so you take the all over the bomb. And maybe you put $10 on the horse if he wins, but the underneath exacta is. It's been a long time play.
Steve, what's with the music here? We have like fiesta going on in the background.
They've been doing it forever, and it's actually right now it's not terrible. Opening day, it was blaring so loud nobody could hear themselves.
I don't know.
Think.
I didn't know if we were going to start doing the Macarena or something.
You could lead it up. Get out in front of everybody. What is your schedule, boys? What's your morning? Rest of your morning?
Rest of the morning, going back, having some coffee. I might make some eggs now.
Nice.
And then we're going to handicap and come back later on. And my brother Tommy's coming in.
Nice.
I haven't seen him in a year and a half due to COVID and stuff, so I'm really excited about that. We'll look at some horses when the New York Breds come in. And so we'll be here for the next three days or so.
Outstanding. Outstanding. All right. Well, Hammer, you know what? We'll reconvene on Friday for handicapping. And the Ellis Park cards ended up being just what we said. Fantastic. Had Vicky Oliver yesterday, who had a magical day.
Was she here?
No. She was home.
I thought I saw her at the sale, but it wasn't her. I was going to go, well, she took over the first day.
Then
so we didn't do too bad, and then the next day, the last race, of course, you talked about, gotta bet might make her, and what happens? The 6-to-5 shot runs out, Horse pays 20. Other one, his other one pays $28. So, good day at Ellis, and we'll see all those horses, the winners, back at Kentucky Downs for our little super meet there. So, we'll be back together on Friday, and hopefully we'll pick some winners for everyone here for the weekend.
Outstanding. Let's take a break here. Top of the hour, Jimmy. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll get. Sid Fernando is going to join us in a second. When we come back, we got a break in 2 minutes or so. And when we come back, Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and a chance for me to meet Cece. And actually, I want to get a group shot of all five of you. So back to Saratoga right after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more...